and welcome to another episode of Beauty of Birth Podcast. Today I am here with my mother-in-law, Lisa Pennings.
Hello. My name's Lisa. I've been married for, I think it's 27 years now. We have 5 children, and interesting birth story. Every single birth has been different, so we've experienced a lot of different things. But as far as who I am, I've always enjoyed just staying home with my kids. Now I have a grandson, and I enjoy having family over and working around the house, gardening, and just being involved in the lives of our children. So that's who I am.
Nice. So if you could start by just telling us about your pregnancies.
Okay. So our oldest son, Aaron, I got pregnant probably a month after we were married. So within a year of marriage, we had our first baby. During that pregnancy, everything seemed to be going normal. But then just about the week before he was due, the doctor did an examination, and then he realized that he is breached. So he sent me for an ultrasound, and he was concerned, and there was something about his attitude when he found the baby was breached. He said, oh, quite often those babies are not nice babies, he said. Their heads are too big, and there's occasionally something wrong with the baby. So he was going to send me for an ultrasound. And he was a little bit rude. He said, how are you with it? You're not going to go home and cry now, are you? And I actually felt really kind of upset at what he had said, that sometimes they're not normal babies. And this is my first pregnancy. So I actually did feel like going home and crying, but I said, mm-hmm. No, I said, I'm fine. And I went for the ultrasound, and he was indeed breached, but his head circumference was normal. In every other way, he looked like a normal baby. But now I'm due in a week, and I suddenly have to adjust to thinking that it might be a complicated delivery. And it was just a different scenario than I had first thought. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But the delivery went fine. I didn't realize until later it did end up with a tear, which took a while to recover from. But it was kind of interesting. When he was born, he was bum first, and his feet went up to his ears, and that was the position he was born in, and that's the position he stayed in for a while afterwards, probably several days before so whenever he would lay down, I'd put him down to bed, he would be folded in half, his feet would come up beside his ears.
That's so weird.
That was Aaron.
Were all your pregnancies with doctors?
The first couple, so Aaron was with Dr. Joel was with a doctor. Alana was with a different one again. And then with Renee, that was when it became more popular. People were really starting to go with midwives. Mm-hmm. And so with Renee, I went with a midwife. But then there were some complications during that pregnancy. So we later had involved also the
OB.
It was a doctor that we saw for high risk pregnancies.
Right.
So it was a specialist, really. So yeah.
And with your last baby, you had a midwife as well.
Yeah, and then with Janessa, I did have a midwife. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was definitely a nicer way to go than with the doctors. I don't know, especially this first doctor that I had with Aaron. He was just kind of rude. He'd been in it for years, and he just wasn't really thinking about the feelings of the mom or anything, but he was just really quite rude.
Yeah, so, that's not good. Not what you want.
Yeah.
Especially for your first, I feel like.
Yeah. So.
How did you feel throughout all your different pregnancies? Did you feel the same throughout all of them, or?
Like, you mean as far as
morning sickness and
yeah, I guess the morning sickness was similar. I think with the first one, it might have been a little worse, but I was always just kind of queasy, a little bit queasy. And the odd time I would throw up, I wouldn't have the greatest appetite in the mornings. And then as the day went by, I'd feel a little better. And it eventually faded away. So it was never really that bad. It was just...
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And every pregnancy was similar. Yeah. That way. Yeah.
How was your sleep and everything else? Was that all good?
Yeah, no, sleep was always, I was a stomach sleeper. Mm. And then as I would get bigger, I couldn't sleep on my belly anymore. So I've always had trouble sleeping the last couple months of pregnancy. So yeah, that has always been a bit of an issue. So yeah. But then with Joel, when I delivered Joel, that was a fairly normal delivery, but he had the cord wrapped around his neck a few times, and so the doctor, I had to stop pushing and they had to quickly cut the cord, and so that was kind of anxious moment, but everything went fine. But then after he was born, I had mastitis with Joel. I think I told you that before.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Joel is my husband, by the way.
Yeah. So I was really sick with the mastitis. I had to go into the hospital. And during that time, I don't think Joel was nursing very much. He wasn't nursing very well. And I didn't realize it at the time, but then there was this one nurse who kept saying, oh, I don't think he's getting anything. And Joel was just crying all the time while he was in the hospital. So finally she scooped him up and she weighed him, and he had lost more than a pound. And that was just, he was just a couple, like a week or two old. I forget exactly how old he was, but it's just a tiny baby. And I remember completely blaming myself. Like, I just broke down and cried. Because after you have a baby, your emotions are already kind of all over the place.
Right.
So, and I was already feeling sick from the mastitis, and it was really uncomfortable. And then when she said that he had lost a pound or a pound and a half, I just broke down and cried right there. I blamed myself completely. I thought it was all my fault. And so... But that's just part of the hormones, I think, just everything getting back. And I was just more emotional than normal. And so,
right.
Yeah. But once I got over the mastitis, he got really chunky and picked up with his weight really quick. So
that's good.
Yeah.
How long were those first two labors, would you say?
So Aaron was 8 hours. They broke my water.
Okay.
And then within 8 hours, he was born.
How long was it before they broke your water? Like early labor?
Okay, so yeah, that Aaron was my first. So I had a lot of the Braxton Hicks for days before.
Okay.
It was kind of hard to know exactly when that labor started, because the Braxton Hicks just kind of got stronger and stronger.
Okay.
So... And that was more, I only had that with Aaron, where it was just was really unclear when I actually was going into labor.
Okay.
So then one day I went in, I thought I was in labor, and I went in, and then the doctor said, well, you're not actually in labor, but I'm just going to break your water and you'll go right into labor.
Oh, okay.
So then that's what happened. So, yeah.
Was he early? Or
no. He was right on time. All of our kids were right on time except for Renee.
Right on the due date?
No. So Aaron was I think he was a day later. He was due August 14. He was born August 13. So,
okay.
Yeah. And then Joel, I'm trying to think. All our kids were like either a day before or a day later.
Wow, that's pretty consistent.
Yeah. But except for Renee. She was 2 weeks early. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how long was Joel's Was your labor
so Joel's labor, I think that labor also was probably around, yeah, a little less. I forget exactly with each one.
Yeah,
like, all blur together. Sense. But none of my deliveries were super, super fast. Like, they were all maybe with a few, with five, you kind of mix them together. But often I would go in, it happened more than once that I went in and I thought I was in labor or close to labor. And they broke my water three times with three of my babies.
Okay.
So, with the first three, with Aaron, Joel, and Alana, they broke my water. So that's, then once they break your water, then you just go into labor.
Right.
And so then within... Yeah, with the later kids, it might have been around 4 hours. So
okay, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
4 hours.
Yeah.
So how was your third child's birth?
So that was Alana. And Alana was always easy. Like, she was an easy pregnancy. She was an easy delivery. She was born very quickly. And she's an easy baby. Everything about her was super easy. Like, just no fuss, nothing. It was just... So with Alana, Actually, it was unusual. I had slept really, really good the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unusual because I normally sleep on my belly and I don't sleep that well. But I remember waking up and feeling really good in the morning. And then I felt a contraction. I'm like, today's the day. So I had felt no contractions through the night. But then in the morning I woke up and I curled my hair and I put on some makeup and I said, Albert, let's go to the hospital. So so I don't remember how long it took. I think it was after lunch Alana was born, and then I went home the same day, and it was my quickest recovery as well, because I think just I had a good start. It just was a full day's work, and then in the evening I didn't miss any sleep or anything, and I recovered really well. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So that one was a really easy, very easy one.
But then the next one is the one.
Yeah, the next one is the one. So with Renee, we had some kind of a tough experience. We went for a regular 16-week ultrasound, and then the doctor was called in to look at the ultrasound, and he was taking a long time to look, and he didn't tell us anything right away.
Mm-hmm.
But then finally he said, we got to send you into, we had to go into London to have another ultrasound on different better ultrasound machine, and we had to see a specialist or something like that. So this ultrasound, it was just before Christmas, and then it was between Christmas and New Year's that we went in to London, and they told us that the baby had a mass in one of her lungs. We didn't know that it was a girl at that time, but one of the lungs had a mass that was 70% of her lung, and also she had a cyst on her brain. So they told us when a baby has two problems, one being the cyst and the other the mass in her lung, the baby's at risk for having trisomy 18. Which is a very serious, like they said, those babies don't live when they're born. And some of the symptoms, or what a baby with trisomy 18 would have is, I don't know, it could be things like a hole in their heart or club feet and club hands. Usually they just die shortly after you deliver. So, but even while the doctor was telling us this, all I could picture in my mind was I had seen the ultrasound and I had seen a perfectly formed baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had seen, she had actually lifted up her hand and just waved her hand across the screen and held up her hand, and I could see five long fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see her little feet, and I could see, and I mean, it didn't take an expert to know that she had nice long fingers and nice, I had seen all her fingers and her toes. So they sent me to see a high risk specialist. I was considered high risk at this point. Mm-hmm. So when I had my appointment with Dr. Natale, who's a high risk specialist, he also told me that, there's a chance she has trisomy 18 and that I should go for an amniocentesis, whatever, but just like where they take the fluid from the uterus and, to see if the baby has any other abnormalities or if there's Down syndrome or anything. And I said, no, I don't want to have that test because it can actually put her more at risk. And I wasn't going to abort the baby anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did not want to take the test. But I was really getting the impression with all the doctors I talked to that they were really trying to paint a bad picture. Because the high-risk specialist kept telling me, trisomy 18, and like you might want to consider terminating the pregnancy. And I said to the doctor, I said, well, I saw her, and I saw her wave at me in this when I looked at the ultrasound, and she had all long fingers, mm-hmm. and her toes, she all looked very well-formed.
Right.
And he said, and then he admitted, he said, yeah, it's actually not likely that your baby has trisomy 18. And I thought, well, that's why weird. Didn't he tell me that before? Like, why was he trying to make me all worried before? But then when I kind of brought the evidence that she looked perfectly formed, then he said, well, yeah, she probably doesn't have it. but he said, but we still are concerned about her lung because it was 70% of her lung and she might have trouble breathing when mm-hmm. she's born. So anyway, we had to go for monthly ultrasounds and then Albert and I would go and it would take up a whole day. We'd have the ultrasound and then we'd meet with all the different specialists. Mm-hmm. Like one was a lung specialist and just from the NICU, different specialists. And they would tell us what they found. So anyway, what happened was every time after that we went, the mass in her lung never grew. The first time that we went, they thought that the mass actually might be a tiny bit smaller than it was before, but they couldn't tell us for sure. So that gave us some hope. And then the second ultrasound, a month later we went, and then the mass was definitely smaller than before. And then we went a month later, and it had shrunk again, and they were having trouble finding the blood vessel that was feeding that mass.
Okay.
And finally, shortly before I was to deliver her, they couldn't even find the mass anymore.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was just, it was nothing there.
Can you imagine if you had terminated the pregnancy?
Like, oh, man. Been... Yeah. But that was, I think, the part that upset me the most was this was not an emergency situation, but they were trying to make it an emergency. Like, they tried to make it look bad. And a lot of women would be really frantic and be like, oh, yeah, I want to be sure my baby's a normal baby. And, like, I mean, people... Yes, I wonder how often it happens that just a perfectly normal baby is aborted because parents are thinking that there might be something wrong with the baby. Like, if I never would have had that first ultrasound, if I would have had no ultrasounds, I would never have known that there ever was a problem with Renee. Like, so, but anyway, when I went into labor with her, I delivered in the NICU.
Okay.
And they told us, so I was surrounded with nurses and the doctors and the different, there was a whole team there. They were, as I was delivering, they surrounded the bed and they were all gowned up and everything. And so they were just ready and waiting to scoop up the baby to just in case she would have a respiratory failure or something. And to me, it didn't make sense anymore because the last ultrasounds showed that she had no evidence of anything.
I guess they just wanted to be safe.
Yeah, I think it was just, and that's what they said. It's like, well, we just want to be sure.
Yeah.
So, and I was kind of yeah, kind of annoyed with the whole thing. Because as soon as Renee was born, they scooped her up. I couldn't even see her. They took her away. And
it's always sad to hear when they're just taking away right away.
But Albert went with them. And yeah, they had to just examine her, and they had to do a chest x-ray and all that kind of stuff. So, but she ended up just being perfectly normal. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, nothing wrong with her. But we went through a lot of emotional turmoil.
That would be really hard.
That was, yeah, I don't know. I sometimes think it was kind of, it was unnecessary. Like, she ended up being fine. And yeah. But God was with us through it all.
Yeah.
Like, I know when we first heard it, that was the most upsetting time, because we were faced with a lot of unknowns. We didn't know whether our baby would live or die. And,
right.
And, but that's when I felt God's presence the most. And it was, I felt like, yeah, whatever happens, we are going to love this baby. Like, and if I only have her for 5 minutes after birth, or if she's born dead, even, like, I'm going to love this baby. Yeah. And this is what God entrusted us with. This is the trial he's chosen to give us. And there's just something great about knowing we have a sovereign God, and that it's all in his hands and we can trust him.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and even though it was hard, like emotionally it was tough, that confidence was there that this was something that God had chosen for us. And yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was Renee.
Wow. Yeah. That would be a hard pregnancy and everything, but it turned out all.
Yeah. It all turned out
amazing. Okay. So that's great.
So yeah.
What about your last baby?
Janessa. Well, that was an interesting one. We had 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls. And we thought that our family was complete. It was perfect, like 2 and 2, a perfectly balanced family. And we didn't think that we would have any other children. But God knew better. So, yeah, when I found out I was pregnant, I was actually quite excited about it, almost right away. It just took me by surprise. I was kind of shocked, but I was really excited. But Albert was, he's just the cautious one. And he's like, oh, can we handle that? So, but he soon became excited. And yeah, it didn't take much for him to get used to the idea. And yeah, it was actually a really neat time in our life where I felt in a new sense that I was called to be a mom. You know, like, our kids had been getting, they were a little older, getting a little older anyway. Like, I didn't have to do all their care for them. They could do more things for themselves. And I was starting to think, oh, this is a really nice stage in life. And I'm done with all this baby stuff. And I had given away all my, you know, the cribs, the toys, and all the baby stuff. I didn't have much of that left anymore. Yeah, I was sort of at a stage wondering, like, what God might want me to do with my life when my kids are a little more independent. But then I got pregnant, and it's like, oh, I know what God wants me to do with my life. He wants me to keep being a mom.
So
I was called again to give myself wholeheartedly into being a mom. And that's been something. Even now I'm a grandma, and I still feel like I'm called to be a mom. It's just it's the most rewarding thing for me, is just to be. I think we often underestimate how much influence we have in the lives of our kids, and that being there for them is not a small calling.
Right.
How much we can shape them, and just to show them the Lord and to lead them in that direction, and what a responsibility that is. Like, I don't know, I don't think moms can ever fully understand how much impact we have in our children's lives. And it's a great calling.
It is.
That was what Janessa, being pregnant with Janessa and having her, that really taught me that in a new way again, that this is just a calling from God. So Yeah, I don't need to be anybody big or famous. I just need to be a mom and exactly. and be faithful in what God calls us to. Like, give it everything that we've got. So,
what was her birth like?
Her birth was, let me think now. So I had a midwife with her, and it was actually, the midwife was a Christian. And it actually was a very beautiful birth. It was when I was delivering, I had never had this with any of our other four pregnancies. Even Aaron, he was a breech, and I should have had a hard delivery, but it was actually quite easy considering that he was breech. Like, and it was my first one. But so I never had a terrible, terrible time delivering babies. But with Janessa, she was, it was like back labor. She was coming out face forward.
Mm-hmm.
So her spine was against my spine. It was back to back. And that is actually the one of the worst positions for a baby to, like, mm-hmm. for pain and discomfort. It was, and I was at a point where I was totally overwhelmed. And I said to Albert, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I couldn't, and I didn't know what was going to become of me. It's kind of weird. It's like, I can't do this, but it's happening anyway. I have exactly. to do this. Like, but anyway, that's how I felt, was that I couldn't do it. So then I said to Albert, as I could hardly, I didn't feel like I could go on. I said, Albert, can you just pray for me? And the midwife was a Christian also. And so she nodded at me. She said she's praying too for me. And it was just so neat to know that as I'm delivering, that they are praying for me. And I prayed also as I'm as I'm going through this. And I'm saying, oh, Jesus, help me. And I kind of said it out loud. And then shortly after that, so that feeling of that I just can't do this anymore was gone, and it became bearable again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the midwife said to me later, after I delivered Janessa, she said, your labor actually changed. Like, during that time, she said, the baby actually shifted, and the labor actually, it was different. And she could see the difference in how I delivered. And so God had answered our prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up that it wasn't as terrible as I thought it was going to be. Like,
yeah.
I could bear it. And and then later the midwife told me that that was the most beautiful labor she had ever seen. But
sweet.
It was really like God was present there
yeah.
and strengthening me. And it seems like a funny thing to think about when you're in labor, but when I was feeling like, oh, I just can't go on, and I was just so uncomfortable, and that was when it's a funny thing to come to my mind at that time, but I thought of Jesus on the cross suffering on our behalf, and how he must have felt
mm-hmm.
bearing our weight of sin. And
mm-hmm.
I know they're totally different things, but that just brought me such, it's like, oh, I could, it helped me to understand a wee little bit.
Yeah.
Like, how overwhelmed Jesus must have been going
mm-hmm.
through what he did for us.
Right.
And I don't know, it's just a little thing. It's not that I can compare that to
yeah.
his suffering, but it just helped me to see, like, and so anyway, yeah, the midwife, there was a sense of God's presence there in a very special way. So
that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So all your birth labors were natural?
Yep. I had, it depends what you call natural, but yeah, like they were, but I had Demerol with some of them, and they broke my water with my first three, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They broke my water. And but other than that, they were natural. Yeah.
Did you ever do any, like, different labor positions or labor in a tub or anything like that?
No. Oh, well, I would always see, especially the last two pregnancies when I was with midwife, they would encourage that kind of thing, like
right.
to walk when you're pregnant and
mm-hmm.
to try the tub or different positions. But I have always had, when I got to a certain point in my labor, that I just wanted to lay down. I just did not want to. I didn't feel like trying different stuff. I just wanted to lay down and get this done. And just, it felt like for me, when I lay down and just focus on the delivery process, that worked the best for me. And I know everybody's different, but that was how I did.
It is crazy how different everyone is, because a lot of people will love to do over different positions. Yeah. And some will be like, I can't that. Do it.
Yeah. But and I remember, especially with Janessa, I was, because it was with a midwife, and they did really encourage it. I actually thought before the delivery that I would like to try it, but I hit that point again, and I was just, I'm so tired. I just want to lay down.
Yeah.
And just so I didn't even try any of
it's
it.
It's whatever is best for you, obviously. Yeah. It's for your delivering. So.
Yeah.
How was your postpartum recoveries with your babies?
I've never really had any postpartum depression or anything like that.
Okay.
That way. And yeah, no, nothing unusual and nothing. I mean, I always recovered fairly quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, like within a week, I usually felt more up and around and ready to do things. Like I could, after a week, I could go to church and stuff like that, or go shopping, grocery shopping, things like that.
So, that's nice.
Yeah.
Did you have tearing with all of them, or just with
No, that was just with Aaron, because he was a breech.
So you had a bad tear with them.
Yeah. So yeah, and that tear took a while to. It was almost worse than the labor.
Because I think fourth degree tears are the worst kind of tears you can have, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was nasty. It took if you're talking postpartum recovery, like that took me a long time, and that was with our first one. So, with Aaron, I don't even remember, but it was weeks before I.
Okay, so that one was
back.
Yeah, the rest were all.
But the rest were all fairly quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was your breastfeeding experience?
Besides
the mastitis.
So I had mastitis. I nursed the babies and I had enough milk for them for. Yeah, I kept nursing. With Janessa, I nursed almost to 2 years, like a year and a half at least, and then I slowly slowed it down to. Like just once a day, but that went on for quite a while. But with most of the other kids, it was like a year. I would nurse them for a year, and I never had any trouble.
That's great.
Yeah. Although I was always lopsided, one side would produce probably 80% of the milk, and the other side 20%.
That's kind of funny.
So, but everybody's different.
Exactly. And, everyone's so different.
Yeah.
With everything.
So,
well, I guess we'll end with any advice that you have for moms.
Advice. As far as pregnancy and childbearing, every single delivery is so different from the other one that it's really hard. And you can always run into things that you're not prepared for. It can just always happen. Especially, and I'm always thankful every time we've had another child and everything went well. It's because there are so many things that could go wrong.
Right.
So it's hard to give advice for childbearing and pregnancy. But as far as with Renee, what we went through with Renee, there is something I've always felt like I want to tell people. And it's like, if something comes that shows that something's wrong with the baby, I think we need to be aware that we're in a culture of death. Like, they want to paint a bad picture. And we need to be able to see past that. Like, it's not the end of the world, even if our child would have had something like Down syndrome or something like that. Or God entrusts us with what he knows is best for us. And
right.
It's just not the end of the world. There's never a need to terminate a pregnancy
right.
for something. Or even to get all... Like, in our case, everything ended up going well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was okay. But even if it wouldn't have gone well, there's just... Every child needs to be loved.
Right.
Every child... Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Just to be aware that in the medical community, they are going to try to make it sound much, much worse than it really is. I'm not saying that it's not... Like, it could have been bad. It could
yeah,
have been. Like,
exactly, yeah.
But they are always going to be supporting, like, abortion and stuff. And... Our minds should never... We should always love life and love
right.
the life that God gives when we become pregnant. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, every life is a gift. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Okay. All right. Well, that was great. Thank you for doing the podcast.
Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Theme song brought to you by my husband Joel Pennings playing on the bass guitar and myself playing the electric piano.